Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Do behavioral seizures occur in companion animals, specifically in dogs and cats? Even more specifically, do behavioral seizures occur in dogs and cats diagnosed with idiopathic epilepsy? Idiopathic epilepsy is med speak that translates seizures for which no medical cause has been determined. We know that the percentage of the canine population diagnosed with any kind of seizures is relatively low, and that in cats is even lower. Because behavioral seizures would comprise a subset of those groups, the numbers of animals who experience behavioral seizures could be very small. And that means they could slip through under the radar unnoticed. Still, experience, including several cases referred by a veterinary neurologist who eliminated the other possible causes, suggests that behavioral seizures could occur, at least in dogs. If so, then it's possible that they might in cats too. My interest in animal seizures began as a new veterinary graduate working in a busy veterinary medical practice. I was fascinated by the uptick in convulsing dogs following the Christmas holidays and the 4th of July fireworks season. Why then? Why not during the peak of the chaos? Wouldn't that be the logical time for the overstimulated animal brain to succumb to a seizure? Later, I read an article on what were called pseudoseizures in people. Today, some also refer to these as psychogenic non-epileptic seizures. Several points discussed in that article made me wonder whether some of the seasonal seizures I was seeing in dogs might be pseudo-seizures instead. One researcher noted that the only medical abnormality found in these people was an elevation in prolactin. Their brainwave patterns were normal during their seizures. Prolactin along with oxytocin are the primary parental hormones. In wolf packs where only the alpha female and male may mate, prolactin levels begin to rise in the spring in all of the pack members, and they peak at the summer solstice. This coincides with when the majority of the pups are born and guarantees multiple sources of parental care for the young. However, human caregivers in contemporary society or those in positions of authority often must go it alone. Could the people with pseudo-seizures be experiencing the burden of caring? A comment made by a patient who received behavioral therapy for her pseudo-seizures and recovered also caught my attention. She admitted that she sometimes missed the instant respite a pseudo-seizure gave her from her stress-filled life. However, the cost of the physical injuries she sustained when she fell during the seizures outweighed this benefit. That's what compelled her to seek treatment. The researchers estimates that 20 to 25% of all seizures in those diagnosed with idiopathic epilepsy could be pseudoseizures also caught my attention. Could this be the case in dogs and cats too? I wondered. It made sense to me that if a person or dog placed in a situation in which they were overwhelmed by their caregiving responsibilities, a pseudo-seizure following a particularly stressful period could be a way to down-regulate the previously overstimulated brain. But although a fair amount of research in the phenomenon has been done in humans, canine research on the topic lags considerably. Interestingly, though, dogs trained to detect epileptic seizures also may respond the same way to people experiencing psychogenic ones. This raises several questions without answers. Given the different physiological responses associated with these two different conditions, to what are these dogs responding? Elevated prolactin levels, perhaps? I don't know. And a somewhat more troubling question. Given the physiological effects of the human-canine bond and the public's positive emotional response to service dogs, could these dogs' responses to some of those diagnosed with pseudo-seizures prolong those patients' recovery? Those questions opened a large, deep, and very dark mental rabbit hole filled with more questions with no answers. At this point, I want to focus on those admittedly few dogs referred to me after my behavioral bond practice was up and running. All five of the dogs were intelligent, naturally more subordinate, and highly attention-seeking animals. All belonged to people who either wanted to avoid or whose dogs had had adverse reactions to conventional anticonvulsant medications. All of those folks were highly reactive to their dogs, and in the process, inadvertently had created human-canine role reversal in their households. This resulted in the dogs assuming protective positions for which they were behaviorally unfit. Of the group, four of the five dogs displayed what I think of as the classic seizure pattern. They became restless, their pupils dilated, and they looked distressed. They dropped to the floor or ground and began convulsing, during which the dogs were unaware of their surroundings. The remaining dog appeared to go into a trance, during which he would frantically gnaw his dog bed and any bedding in it, oblivious to his surroundings. Four of the five dogs had committed owners who wanted to help their dogs. The fifth depended on her dog's considerable lineup of stress-driven, attention-seeking behaviors so much for her own well-being, she wouldn't give them up, not even temporarily, to help her dog. She only wanted what she considered the worst symptom, the seizures of her dog's distress, eliminated. She had no interest in dealing with the cause. I didn't agree with her choice, but I respected her honesty. The remaining four dogs gradually improved as their owners replaced their previous needy behaviors with those that position them as reliable, trustworthy role models. Even though some of those folks initially had to fake their confidence in themselves and their dogs, they all succeeded in communicating the kind of positive emotional support that helped their dogs relax. Play therapy and massage also played active roles in these new human-canine interactions, because of the message of well-being these communicated. Dogs who once paddled, twitched, and whimpered in their sleep began to sleep more soundly and experienced the kind of restorative sleep that facilitated learning. Multiple factors make it impossible to come to any solid conclusions regarding whether these dogs' seizures truly were behavioral in origin, or that the changes in their owner's bonds with their dogs eliminated these. Of those factors, two in particular rule out such conclusions. One, the sample size is way too small. Although I must admit that I've seen some behavioral and bond studies on other subjects that came perilously close to it. Two, every program was designed to meet the unique needs of every human and canine involved and the bonds formed between them. That adds a lot of variables to the process. Instead, I saw and see these as seed planting experiences, ones that remind me what an amazing, highly integrated organism the human and animal mind-body is, ones that remind me of the powerful link between human and animal behavior and the bond in sickness and in health.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.